Hello and welcome to DHL's brand new The Greatness series with me, Abby Stevens. This episode is the first in a series which aims to demonstrate what success looks like across a range of sectors, but particularly in sport and in business. Today's episode will concentrate on greatness, and with that, I'm joined by three special guests from three of DHL's partners across three different sports. Each of their clubs have experienced great success over the last few years, and between them, they have a combined 5 IPL titles, an FA Cup, a Premier League title, a Community Shield, and Gallagher Premiership honours. So it's with great delight to introduce FA Cup winner, Premier League champion, current Leicester City and Denmark goalkeeper, Kasper Schmeichel. Hi Kasper, how are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you.
Thank you for being with us. Awesome. And we also have Harlequins legend Danny Kerr, 84 caps for his country, including 3 Six Nations titles, as well as a Grand Slam. Danny, just come off the training pitch. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Hello, everyone.
And dialing in from Mumbai, a legend, a giant of the cricket world. His CV boasts 137 caps playing for Team India, scoring over 2,000 runs, claiming 69 wickets in the process, and then following up that impressive career with an equally impressive coaching career, picking up so much silverware, including 5 IPL titles. He's the current batting coach for Mumbai Indians. A very warm welcome to you, Robin Singh. Gentlemen, it's a pleasure to have you all here, and we are going to put this laser-like focus on the idea of greatness today so that we can learn from your lived experience, what you do day in, day out, so that we can hopefully apply one of those two or two of those lessons, even better if it's two, but really just to get an idea of what greatness means to you all. So Kasper, I'm going to start with you. What was your first memory of seeing greatness on the pitch?
I would probably say it would be my experience of growing up watching Manchester United and watching their players, watching my father, seeing the daily sacrifice and routines that you have to do to reach that kind of level, the time it takes. Yeah, I'd say Man United was probably, as a team, the first kind of experience I ever saw of greatness.
And Robin, Danny, would you say it the same? Was it about seeing another team execute greatness, or was there a particularly unique aspect for you to get this idea of greatness, Danny?
I'm a big Liverpool fan, so seeing Man United's greatness was bad for me. I didn't like that. I didn't enjoy it as much as Kasper probably did.
You're doing all right now, though.
Yeah, going all right. But I fully agree. I'm a big football fan, so watching Man United, seeing them do the treble, for me, that's greatness. In a rugby context, I'd say the first real experience of greatness, I think, was seeing England win the World Cup in 03. That team led by Martin Johnson, just an incredible team. Everything kind of came together. It was against all odds down in Australia, and they managed to pull it out of the bag. Obviously, Johnny Wilkinson with that famous right-footed drop goal. For me, that performance defines greatness in a way.
Yeah, I can echo that. I was in Sydney at the time. I was in the stadium, and it was just an electric moment which stays with you. And that's the power of sport, isn't it, Robin? When you have this, I suppose, tangible, visceral experience of witnessing sport and the emotions that it can bring, it can just stay with you and inspire greatness. What was that moment for you, Robin?
I think, I don't know how many of you, but I was born in West Indies, so I think it was more about West Indian cricket before I was 19, and I moved to India, so then it became more about Indian cricket. So it was really in two parts. I think for me, it was about West Indies team. In the 80s and the 90s, where it really dominated cricket throughout the world. And, of course, India winning the World Cup in 1983. It's not just about winning, but I think it's about defining the sport and what is the impact it has had on people over the years. And it's literally transformed Indian cricket to a different level.
Yeah. And, Danny, I'm going to come to you for this point because you've been with Harlequins over 300 appearances. You know, you're a long servant of the Southwest London club. What is continually inspiring your search and execution for greatness?
Yeah, I'm just clinging on with my fingernails at the minute. Now, I think what I love about the club is we always try to stick true to our identity. And I think when you know your identity as a club, that breeds then confidence. And then you know exactly what you're trying to do day in, day out, whether that's the guys in the office through to the guys on the pitch. We had a real clear identity last year. We went back to the basics. We kind of researched our ancestry again and went back to what it takes to be a Harlequin. And to be a Harlequin, it was playing with fun, playing with flair, playing with some tempo. We went back to that style of play. And lo and behold, it started working on the pitch, and we achieved something that no one thought was possible for that group. We managed to get to the grand final and win the whole thing. So I think you dig it a bit deeper, you've got to go back to your identity, find what that is, live it every day, and then hopefully the rewards will come. And for us last year, we saw greatness. Helps when you've got a couple of wizards like Marcus Smith running the show, the young little whippersnapper we've got who's doing amazing for England at the moment. But we've got some great young players sprinkled with a couple of experienced wiser heads, which you need in business and in sport. And yeah, we achieved some great things last year.
When you say about Marcus Smith and the whippersnappers of the Quinns lineup, how are you imparting your maturity, your wisdom on them so that they can also strive for that, those values that you've said about Harlequins, which are so then real for them? How can they continually apply that on the pitch?
Yeah, I think our club's unique in a way that you don't get told what to do. It's a play what you see type environment, which I think is why I love it, why I've never looked to leave. You know, so I've been here 16 years now. You get a license and a freedom as a player to go out and express yourselves, and they're going to make mistakes, but it doesn't matter, just how you react to them. I think these young lads coming in, they have no fear. So Marcus Smith and Alex Donbrant have no fear. They'll play for England and they'll throw the ball around and not worry about the consequences. So hopefully the sort of lessons they've learned at Quinns will help them in their life as well. I really do think rugby and sport especially teaches you some incredible life lessons. Being a Harlequin, the main thing we try and do is have fun, which I think you can take into any walk of life.
From Danny's answer there, Robin, there's this idea of freedom that feels quite real. How are you inspiring that from the sidelines in your team to get the best out of those players?
I think it's important to allow people to be free. In cricket, for example, especially in the shorter format of the game, you need to allow people to play with a lot of freedom because the game is so fast. And we try to say, you know, some of the things, sometimes I say it's like fast food, you know, you go, you buy, you have to execute. I think it's important when you play T20, the shorter format of the game, is to allow people to go there and express their skills, not really think too much about the results. And it's important to trust them. You know, that is the most important thing that I found when in coaching, because one of the things that we do well is we structure things well. We have a lot of support from the management, the owners, and we're allowed to even coach with a lot of freedom and express, you know, try and sort of instill our experiences and see how we can take away things from others as well. Because IPL is such a short format, and even though we get together just for about 2.5 months, but we keep track of what people are doing all the time. And we try and see what we can help them impart into their game based on the way we want to plan the brand of cricket that we want to execute on the ground. We have a lot of characters in our team. I think it's important to have characters in a sport. You don't want to be a boring team. And it's important to go there and send that message across and play the type of cricket that is expected, that people want to see, and importantly, enjoy it, you know.
And how are you instilling that trust in that team when you are coming together just for a short period of time?
I think it's about making people understand what they're capable of. This is a very technical game as well, and you have to use, you know, your intelligence is very critical. It's not just about being able to execute, but the execution has to be like so fast. Because I don't know how well you know the sport, but it's like it's only 120 balls, but every single ball actually defines what turn the game will make. And it can be good or it can be bad or it can be in your favor. And the more right decisions you make, or the more you back yourself and you trust yourself to do execute those skills, and it's important to do that. So what we do in practice is we try and do that as often as we can, and try and eliminate mistakes. So the lesser mistakes you make under pressure in those situations, the more chances of winning the game.
And Casper, when we're hearing about eliminating mistakes, but we're hearing about it matched with a sense of fun, your teammates often describe you as the ultimate professional. How are you sort of creating that balance with those players around you?
I think it's important to set an example, of leading by doing as well. You know, you can be as vocal as you want, but if you aren't backing it up by doing, then people aren't going to follow you. So I think it's really important to make sure that when you are in, you are the first in, you are coming in to train, to get better every day, you're coming in to improve something, you're coming in with a plan, you're not just turning up to training for the sake of it, you're turning up for a purpose, you're constantly striving for better, you are never satisfied with your last performance, you always find new ways of improving. I think things like this, listening to the guys and kind of experiencing other sports, how they do it, is really, really important for our education as footballers. I think in the football world, you can close yourself off a lot because you can turn on the TV, at least here in England, and there's nothing but football. And then, you know, cricket, rugby and all the others, they get a little 5-minute segment at the end of the news, you know. So I think it's really important also to learn lessons from other sports and to kind of bring them, you know. I try and bring those lessons in, and I'm a big NFL fan, and as a goalkeeper, the role of the quarterback is similar to mine in terms of you train very different to maybe the others. The same in kind of tennis, you know, you have very similar movements as a goalkeeper. So those are the kind of sports, the two sports that I focus a lot on, because you need huge individual mental strength to play those positions, because on the tennis pitch, as on a tennis court, you're on your own, you know, and as a keeper, you wear a different kit, you are on your own in that situation. It is a sport within a sport. And the same for the role of the quarterback in NFL, it is very similar. It is a different sport within the sport, and so much revolves around you being perfect. And you talk about eliminating mistakes. As a keeper, you can't make mistakes. You have to be perfect, because mistakes is what cost you the game, and that cost your teammates, that cost the club. So that's a huge, huge responsibility on your shoulders. So every single day you have to be striving, and every single day you have to be working harder than everybody else on the physical side, the mental side, the technical side. And in goalkeeping, we work in, you know, it's millimeters. So small details like when you place a goal on a training pitch, is it placed exactly the correct spot? Because that can, you know, 1 centimeter can make the difference between success and failure. So I think setting those examples, being meticulous in the things you do, and being positive in how you convey those messages is really important.
But in that strive for perfection, how are you managing that pressure so that it doesn't tip over and almost take control of you?
Well, I think the guy said it, enjoyment. I don't think you can become an elite sportsman and have longevity without enjoying it. Because at the end of the day, the day is like, I'm looking out our window today, it's raining like crazy, it's probably, 4 degrees. Those days when you have to go out and dive around and put your face in front of a ball that's traveling at 100 mile an hour, you know, you've got to love doing it. So it comes down to enjoyment for me as well. You have to make the sessions enjoyable. So our goalkeeper sessions, our specific goalkeeper sessions, are always competitions against each other, you know, and you take an enjoyment in beating the others. So, the element of fun has to be there. I think football, sport, elite sport can become so overawing, it can consume you, that you have to have that release of it being fun as well.
Yeah. Danny, do you have the same thing on the training ground where there's many competitions? I'm just thinking about you and some of your forwards.
Yeah, I try and stay away from all the bigger lads. And the problem for me is that they're all bigger than me. Abby. So it's tough. Like rugby, again, is similar to Casper. I'm looking outside. It's not great down here. And I know at some point today I'm going to be out there and someone's going to try and hurt me because that's their job. But look, I think we're three incredibly lucky people. We do a job that we love. It's hard to even call it a job. You know, I get to throw a rugby ball around and take the mickey out of a load of lads all day and have fun. You know, it's the best job in the world. I think very interesting hearing what the lads say, learning from different sports. Casper, I fully agree with that. Like I say, I'm a big football fan. But also what Robin said about trust. I think trust is absolutely key, that you've got that trust between the coaches and the players. We took that kind of to the extreme last year. Our head coach, they decided to make a change with our head coach halfway through the season. And the coaches, for the first time probably ever in my career, said, right, what do you lads need? What do you need to be successful? So we were like, oh, wow, okay, we'll try a few things here. So we took one of the days. We said, we don't need to train the day before a game. Don't need to do it. And they were like, oh, I don't know. Like, okay, we'll do that. And we're like, all right, this is nice. So we took a whole training day out of the schedule, which people might say, you know, you lazy cutting corners. But for us, it was a day that we didn't need. If we were prepared in the week on a Thursday, you didn't need the Friday to be ready for the Saturday, you know. So we took that out. The lads got their legs. The legs were fresher. And come to the weekend, boys were flying around, making bigger tackles. We were faster. We were running for longer distances. And those little things worked. But that was only because the coaches listened to us and then trusted the fact that, and we as players then, you have a responsibility to perform. So on the weekend, there's that extra pressure on the players to be like, look, we've got it good here. We're training hard, but we're training for shorter periods of time and we've got an extra day off. Let's not mess this up. Let's play well. And then we started playing well. We got on a roll and then we were happier. And then it all kind of goes in a bit of a circle and you keep going. I'm sure that the lads would say a similar thing, that momentum in sport is huge. You know, Casper's season with Leicester when they won the league, I turned into a Leicester City fan because I loved what they're all about. I used to play football with Jamie Vardy back in the day. So he was exactly the same at 14, 15 as he is now, which I'm great. I love seeing. But yeah, those sort of sporting miracles, I was fully a Leicester City fan that year.
Yeah. I think everyone, it's like what you were saying about the 2003 Rugby World Cup. You remember where you are when that happens and it creates a sense of community where it's beyond the club, it's beyond the sport, it just consumes you. Robin, to the point that Danny was making around giving the players the permission almost to stand up and say what they need to get the best out of them, is that something that you've worked with because you've coached, you know, a whole host of world famous cricketers?
Yeah, I think I've been a little fortunate because apart from playing the sport, I've been involved in the second half of my career is mostly coaching, administrative side of it, and of course the financial side of it. So I've been fortunate enough to understand what it takes as a player. I've been really fortunate when I started coaching. I would say the first 2 years, I actually learned a lot about coaching, mostly from the players, trying to understand. I mean, people like Sachin Tendulkar, Rahul Dravid, just a few to name. And then you talk to other people in other franchises. I mean, a lot of cricketers, you understand how they train in their environment. You have to understand the dynamics of what works for them, what does not work for them, and allow them to express themselves, you know. And it's more about the learning experience for me, because, of course, you would play the sport in a particular way. But what I try to do is I try to understand as a player what I like, what, you know, in that situation, what I would have loved to do. And similarly, I expose the players in the same environment. And then you try and decipher what will work and what won't work. Of course, you have a lot of technology today, which helps you a lot. We have a lot of people on the side who can help you with different things. And we sort of break it down into small things and sort of decipher what will help. But it's really important to understand both sides of the coin. A lot of players don't understand what it takes from a coaching aspect. Sometimes you have to take some really harsh decisions with players who you trust and who have done really well, but you see that they're fading away, they're getting older, it's time to move on. But how do you tell them, you know? So these are some of the elements that you need to take into account. At the same time, you have to be ruthless if you want to win. There's no point mincing words, you know. You have, as the guys were saying, you have to put in the effort. Even as a coach, I mean, you have to get in there and you have to come out last. There is no question about it. And you have to be available all the time at any given point in time. And that's the fact of the matter.
And what in particular have you taken from those moments where you played and you thought, right, this is what is going to inform some of my coaching?
I think it's important to allow the players to take decisions, right? So we as a management, we will take certain decisions, right? But even as a player, you need to listen to them a lot. A lot of people don't listen. I think when I played the sport, we didn't have too many coaches around. So we had to take decisions ourselves. We were not helped in anywhere at all. There was no technology. So I think these are the things that have really helped us going forward. And we allow these players to come up with their own plans, their own ideas, and see how best we can execute. See, if you look at the young generation today, their thought process is very, very different to the way we played the sport. Or the way I would play the sport, for that matter, or in the 80s or in the 90s, if you look at the eras. So what I do a lot is I go back into different eras and I'm trying to compare what are the changes that are made, right, in the sport. And it's not only cricket. I look at other sports as well. I mean, I'm a great football fan, right? I've always been a fan of Germany, by the way. I love the way they play the sport. They're very tough to beat. And I've always admired the fact that they got to the semis, most of the World Cups, even from the 70s, right? And that's one of the sports. And then many other sports, I mean, I look at different sports and take things out of that as well and see how we can implement these things. I think from a coaching perspective, as I said earlier, it is important to allow the players to take decisions, to make mistakes, and to see how we can rectify those mistakes going forward. So, I mean, these are some of the lessons that you take. I mean, and you learn something every day. I mean, you listen to people and you hear them talk. And we listen to young kids. And the ideas are very, very different to the way you would want to execute things. Of course, one of the key things that we look at, and we look at going back to the basics, because the sport itself does not change. The basics of the sport does not really change. But, you know, the power hitting, people become stronger. Equipments have become better. So things like that have sort of improved and helped. But it doesn't mean that your mentality changes after a certain point, right? And it's all about the approach that you want to adapt and adopt to play. And if your mentality is to make those changes, and the change for me is always up here, right? If you can't think, you can't make the change. Unless you accept that change, right? Unless you accept that thought process, and you buy into it, you can't really make that change, however much a coach may tell you.
It's such an interesting point, and I think that speaks of so much of the changing times. Because like you say, when you've got all the fundamentals there, physically you're on the top of your game, it does become, and sport makes it so tangible, I guess, those minutiae changes that a winning mentality can give you. Casper, again, I'm going to come back to that, because when you were speaking, it feels like this mental preparation is something that you have really taken to heart. But what are those practices? So, again, the everyday person, you don't have to be playing for an FA Cup or a Premier League title, can apply to their own lives.
I think, particularly as a goalkeeper, the game is mental. Basically, because of the pressure that you're on, that you can't. Yeah, you can't make these mistakes. Like I say, it costs your team. So you just have to be really, really robust and meticulous in your preparation. I think the mental strength and the mental side of it comes from doing that work. So basically doing your homework, knowing you are as prepared as you can be and accepting that mistakes will happen. I think the worst thing that would be for me was if I made a mistake and thought I could have prepared better or I could have done something better, then that means I've cut corners. That means that I haven't paid the right level of detail and attention to my ultimate goal. So when I do make mistakes, I can look myself in the mirror and say, right, that happens, that's human, that's natural, but I've done everything to prepare for the eventuality. I've done everything to prepare that wouldn't happen, but you can't always avoid it. I think particularly as a goalkeeper, the robustness is really important, because you do have to have this sense and this aura that you are in control and that you are right. you know, because you'll have, when you play away from home, you know, when you're fetching the ball, you'll have 20,000, 30,000 fans shouting the most horrible kind of abuse that you're trying to get in your head. So what you try and do and you replicate in training, you try to recreate those extreme situations, you know, where you are under extreme duress, where you're mentally tired, you're physically tired, and that's how training kind of goes. And that's why training becomes a competition, because it is a competition every single day. And you have to, as a goalkeeper, you have to be the best, because there's only one of us that can play. So every single day is this mental challenge of, you know, like Danny said, going out and getting hit and getting hurt, but accepting that that's part of your job. But also accepting that mistakes can and will happen, but making sure that you put in all the daily grind to make sure that when they do happen, you can look yourself in the mirror and say, I haven't cut corners, I haven't, you know, I haven't wasted my time and been ineffective in the time I've been in the training ground, been away from the training ground. I've watched all the analysis I need to watch. I've done all the stuff in the gym. I've done everything that could be done. And that's, at least for me, that's what helps me to move on very quickly from mistakes.
Yeah. And where do you factor in recovery with that? Because it's a lot to put on pressure-wise each day.
Physically, recovery for me is different, because physically the games aren't as tough for me as, for example, a training session is. But yeah, recovery for me is more mental, and I think it's really, really important for anyone at such an elite level where it does consume your life, that you have something away from football, something that's got nothing to do with the sport. For me, I've got three kids. That does take a lot of my time, but I don't know. I started during lockdown playing guitar. I love cooking. I love, like I said, playing tennis, or just doing something that has nothing to do with football. Just switching my mind off. The months where the NFL is on is great, because after games, when your adrenaline's pumping, you can't sleep. It's on through the night, and that just helps you switch off and just get into a different world. Immerse yourself in that game, or immerse yourself in learning to play some kind of song on the guitar, or something, like I say, just has nothing to do with football.
Danny, when you've mentioned that you've had this incredible career at Harlequins, and now you've got this young crop of players that are amongst the setup, you've mentioned the transition that the team's gone on, and you found the identity. I suppose I'm coming back to this point of, how do you live it? Like, you know that there's this sense of flair and fun that you want to bring in, but how are you amongst the team going out there and living these principles, like Casper is saying?
Yeah, I think the big thing, you talk about it. So you set out, or you get into training the day, you say, right, you know, it's all written up in, on the walls. It's our sort of motto, our team motto, and you say, right, you've got to live by these values every day. I think, you know, one of them is tempo, so we play quickly, so we make sure training's quick. And if training isn't quick and we're not performing, someone will pull it in and we'll call it there and then you automatically reset. Another thing is relationships. So off the field, sitting down with someone that you don't know particularly well, we took a time into our schedule to bring in a load of cakes. Now, the nutritionist hated us because they brought in so many cakes that we have a coffee and cake morning every Tuesday, I think it is, where you have an hour where you go up there, there's no rugby, it's nothing, you don't talk about anything technical, but you get to know someone in the building. That could be someone that you play with, it could be someone that one of the analyst guys, it could be anyone, but you spend some time with each other. And I think that time becomes invaluable. It's only a tiny thing, it's probably a 1%, but in the last minute of a game where you have to go and make a try-saving tackle to help that teammate that you maybe care about a little bit more because you know a little bit more about them, you do it in those tough moments, and then that becomes innate. So I think it sounds very simple, but it is about living the values every day. Going in the morning, checking it, but also checking it on the way out as well. If you did live our values, then the weekend's going to probably be all right. And at the weekend, and sometimes I think what Casper was saying is, like, everybody isn't perfect in any walk of life. No one walks into a job in a business or into goal for Leicester City. You don't walk in there perfect. It takes an awful lot of hard work. And for me, I think my best experiences and why I've got better as a player is from the bad things that have happened, from losing out in big games. We went to Wales to win a Grand Slam and lost 30-3 in an absolute cauldron at their ground, and I've never heard abuse like it. And that was awful for me. But then 3 years later, we go to France to win the Grand Slam. And because of the bad experience I've had, I learned an awful lot about myself that day. I learned I wasn't as prepared as I needed to be. I wasn't good enough yet to win a Grand Slam. We go to 2016, 3 years later. Because of that bad experience, I was ready. And we all were ready. And we took our opportunity and we won it. So I think you have to go through adversity to appreciate the good times. And it's all a part of a journey. And not just in sport. I think that's in life. I imagine the same in your life, Abby, and anyone on this call through business or whatever they do. I think the bad things can also help shape good things in the future.
Yeah. But it's a strong mindset to not let those bad times sort of freeze your trajectory and not inform how you play next. So what would you say are the lessons in taking the good from a difficult experience to enable sort of winning as the result?
Yeah, I think the first thing is the self-reflection piece, like Casper was saying. I could easily have finished that game and gone, oh, you know, they were lucky. On another day, we'd have won it. But the reflection was, okay, we weren't good enough. We weren't good enough as a team to achieve a bit of greatness there. So the first thing is, I think you've got to look at yourself. Firstly, work out where you need to improve. And if everybody does that, you've got then a collective goal of that. That's so positive moving forward to then get better. And I think obviously it hurts. It took a while for us to get over that. But I think the great thing about sport is you've always got something else to look forward to. That's why we're so lucky. You lose on the weekend, but okay, well, we've got next weekend to get better. That is now our new goal. So we get to instantly set a new goal. We just lost 3 games in a row with Quins, and we're in that bit of a rut at the moment. And we've actually had a conversation this morning about, well, we're lucky because we know on Saturday we've got another game back at home, fully packed, 15,000 there, which we'll be going mad. And we've got an aim to go out there and show what we can do, and we'll do that by sticking to what we do, sticking to our identity, and living it every day.
Mm. It's really interesting because the three partners of DHL here, there's lots of echoes of similar values. Danny, you've talked about this speed, and obviously that's one of DHL is as well, as this passion and this can-do attitude. But what's really interesting is how you apply that individually when they're team sports as well, Robin. You've mentioned that you've got characters in Mumbai Indians and you want to protect those characters because sport, entertainment, we want those. But how are you managing the collective success when you have got individuals that all need different levels of motivation, reassurance, different emotional support?
I think it's important for them to understand the role that and why they're there. So we try to fulfill that when we select the squad. We have a few players who are really crucial to actually winning the games for us. And each individual in the team actually makes or plays a different role for us. And we have a lot of backup support for us as well. Naturally, you can't get two people who are the same. It's important to understand that. And I think with the guys who were saying that it's important for people to critically analyze themselves and to understand that, you know, whether they're good enough or not. I mean, this year we didn't even qualify and we were probably tipped to win the tournament for a third time, which was very, very rare. I honestly, as a coach, thought we should have won that with the sort of team that we had. We blew away everyone the previous year in IPL. And it was a no-brainer. I mean, I've played in a final, for example, and it didn't even look like a final, to be honest. So it was just like a walk in the park. So we had got to that sort of level, and then this year we didn't even qualify, to say the least. So you can't get very complacent. It's important to stay really grounded as a team and to understand that, hey, we are not just here as a team, but we represent many other things going forward. And I think it's important to also understand that the people who are behind the scenes, we tend to forget those things quite a lot, but they are the ones who actually keep us on track. And, you know, it's really to ensure that individuals understand what roles they need to play and to play that to perfection, as we would say.
Yeah. And Danny's mentioned the identity. What would you say are those kind of values that Mumbai Indians hold true to their heart when they go out on the pitch?
Yeah, we want to play the sport aggressively. We want to play the sport honestly. And we want to play a brand of sport that is exciting, you know, that people like to see. Of course, for us, it's about representing Mumbai. And I always say that, you know, whichever team you play for, it becomes the team. You know, it hardly matters whether you're playing for India or not. And your teammates around you are really critical. And that's what really makes the team special. So it's important to understand exactly what you want to achieve going forward. And I think identify that and go with the flow.
And you mentioned about eliciting freedom on the pitch, but there seems to be a freedom of which you coach with and you revert expectations. And often some of those standout players are uncapped players. So how do you find the bravery in you to trust what those instincts are?
I think when we identify those players, we identify their skill sets, right? You know, how good they are. Potentially, we would look at them for 10 years. We don't look at someone for a year or so. So we think very long term. We don't think very short term. And it is a process. And you have to follow the process. You can't shortchange the process, as one would say. Maybe you'll have a great game, but you find that you get found out very fast, and you have to teach and guide people through those years to ensure that they sort of take on the role of somebody else. We try to sort of get someone, say, pair up with someone who's similar to them, so they understand, you know, what are the ups and downs of the sport, and you learn and you try and get better and better every year. So every year we try to improve on that. If we feel players don't fit into our setup, we sort of try and fill those gaps as well. And you find that it takes you about 2 or 3 years to really build a really strong side, get the brand of cricket that you want. And then you start trusting those people to really, really, not just trusting, but you're giving them the mantle to really deliver. And see, expectations are always there. Right. If people say that there's pressure, I think pressure is part of the deal. Right. When you pay the big bucks, you are supposed to perform. So I think it's important to focus on what your role is and what your skills are and try and go out there and execute that. And some people can handle it well. Some people can't. But it's important not to get distracted, if I may say so.
Yeah. There seems to be this idea of relationships as well, Casper, that is so important to getting the best out of the team. Do you have Tuesday morning coffee and cake at Leicester City?
We don't. We probably in time probably more had a beer together after games and things like that. And you know, it's probably quite an unconventional thing when you think of elite sport, but sitting down having a beer together and actually just getting a little bit looser and chatting, that's when you get to know people. And like Danny said, it's such a massive part of team sport is knowing what the individual that's next to you or in front of you is going through, because whatever that person is going through or who they are or their story, it's going to affect what they are and who they are on the pitch and how they're playing. You know, it's no good me, you know, getting onto someone's back for not performing if I don't know that he's having a tough time at home or he's having a tough time with whatever, then, you know, as a leader, you need to know these things. You need to know the people around you and you've got to treat people according to that. And that's why the moments, particularly after games when emotions are high and you know, you get calmed down and you just sit down and you talk as humans. That's so important to have that human element in sport, because, like I said before, it can become overpowering, overawing to be in this environment where you have to be this certain person or you have to win every single game you go into. And you know, sport in general, I can only obviously speak from football by playing it, but it gives you these incredible highs and it also gives you these incredible lows. And chances are that in an average career, you'll probably have more lows than you will highs. So knowing the person next to you is vitally important for going that extra yard for them, or like Danny said, to go and make that tackle. And yeah, having those characters, like Robin said, is so important in a dressing room, because no team, I think, has ever succeeded if everyone's the same. Everyone brings something different to the dressing room. You'll have your very serious guys. You'll have your jokers who lighten the mood. You'll have lots of different types of people within there. I think it's important to mix that. And you know, you'll have your defenders who are a certain way, and you'll have the flair players who are a certain way. And sport would be really boring without the different types of personalities.
And as a captain, how have you developed those leadership traits? Because I can remember someone said to me, and it was such a powerful thing about leadership not being a noun, but being a verb, and that needs something that is also worked on. So what has informed your leadership? You've talked about role modelling, but what else have you sort of developed as a coach, as a captain, as a leader?
I think you're completely right in leadership being a verb and not a noun. Like I said before, it is first and foremost walking the walk, setting the example, and not asking, you know, I would never ask anyone to do anything that I wouldn't do myself, you know, and being visible, being present, being approachable, knowing not just the players around you, knowing the staff around you, making sure that everyone is there to do their best, you know, and you're there for them. I think leadership is you are there to serve. You're not there to kind of always be pulling in some direction. You're there to serve the purpose of the team. And for me, I have used a lot of different methods. I work with a guy who was commander in the Danish military, because I think if you've learned anything from this call, is that the principles of team is pretty much the same, whether it's rugby, cricket, or whether it's military or whatever it may be. The principles of teamwork are very basic and they don't change. And I met this guy, he's called Kim Christensen. He's written an incredible book called Follow Me, which I can recommend to anybody. And I basically heard him talk once he came and spoke to our national team, and you know, the way he spoke and the things he was saying gave me chills, and it was kind of like, wow, this is the kind of leader I want to be. So I approached him and we started working together, and he's helped me a lot in different situations. And I think also acknowledging as a leader, you're not always right. You know, you do things with the best intentions, but you're not always right, and you have to take on board certain situations where you could do things different. And that's where having someone like him watching you and evaluating you and advising you from a different perspective than a football coach, for example, you know, actually just looking at me as a leader, not looking at me as a goalkeeper or a football player, and particularly looking at my body language, the messages that I convey in interviews and these kind of things are all vital, because you are, as a, not just as a footballer but as a leader, you are judged all the time, and anything you do on and off the pitch, and particularly in the world of social media, will be seen. And it's really important, you know, as both the lads have said, living those values, that's the be all and end all. I think
it speaks about you as a character, though, because that you went out and sought that. And I wonder how often we all in everyday life go, okay, that's where I need help in order to grow. I think that's such a skill that sports people have that I think we can all take from. And especially when you've got to the highest levels of your career, when you still think, okay, I need to keep getting better. Danny, we talked about characters. What would you say is your character that you play in the Quinn setup? I think we've got an idea of what it might be, but how your personality informs how everyone plays.
Yeah, I think what I love about the club is it kind of feels like it's my club in a way, and obviously it's not my club, but the values that the club has are kind of very, very similar to mine. I like to do things quickly. I like to be fairly unpredictable. I definitely like to enjoy myself. So something I'll always do is walk in the training with a smile on my face. I think it's really interesting hearing Casper talking about captaincy, because I did it for a couple of years and I found that the one thing you shouldn't ever do as a captain is change who you are. And I felt like I probably did that. I tried to be a little bit more serious and take things probably too seriously, when I think the best way that I lead is by leading by example and doing my stuff on the pitch and being me, playing my own game. So it took me a while to realise that. I think when I did realise that, I was a much better captain. And I think now I'm a much better leader from, again, some fairly average performances as a captain. I learned from that. And I think the best way that I can help and develop these young lads is by being me, being honest with them, trying to tell them a few things that I did that they shouldn't probably do, which I think helps as well. But I think the main thing for me is of a captaincy or as a leader is staying true to yourself. I think knowing what you're good at, doing that. And if the stuff you aren't that good at, then empower other people and delegate well. Delegate to others. I'm not going to tell a prop how to scrum. I still don't have a clue what goes on in there. I'm 20 years into the game. I've no idea when I put that ball in what's happening, but I just try and get it out. So I would never tell Joe Marler.
I did have Joe Marler in mind.
I've tried a couple of times and I've been punched for it, really, so I won't do that again. So I think stay in your lane, know what you're good at, and lead in that way.
It's such a, there's so many kind of mantras that we can take from this session, but play your own game feels a real strong one. Robin, from what the others have said about how they've developed their own signature style, what would you say if someone was going, okay, what kind of coach is Robin Singh? Give us an idea. What are your absolute fundamentals, your Robin USP?
I think it's important, as I said earlier, to allow people to execute based on the skill sets that they have. I like to look a lot at the basics of anything, right? And then from there, you build around that. And of course, let people play the role, as we said. And I always use the word character, because it forms a different style of playing. I don't like to follow people's style. I'm very innovative in my thinking, and I'm very open to criticism and comments. And I'm ready to try anything, you know. But what I do is I ensure that there is no way that one should be giving up, you know, win or lose. Because whatever happens at the end of the day, you can take something out of every situation and take it forward. And we try to build on those things. And of course, you know, I would say that you learn a lot more when you lose than when you win. And that's always the case. And you tend to criticize, self-analyze. And I'm someone who, as I said, I like people to put in the work. You know, I mean, if I'm not satisfied with something happening, or we've not finished a particular assignment or a job or training for that matter, we tend to push it. So if I say it's 2 hours, we might end up doing 4 hours. So there is no time limit to anything till we are satisfied, mentally satisfied, that we can go out there and execute. And that's the way I operate. And, you know, as Casper was saying earlier, I'm someone who is known to be quite a taskmaster, in the sense that I'll get there first and I'll end up last, and I'll do as much as anybody else. I try to do that as well today, so that no one can really point a finger and say, the coach has asked me to do this and he's not doing it, right? So that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, as I said, along the way, you have to enjoy yourself. It's really important to enjoy yourself and to take that forward.
It's one thing that I think this sport does really well that I think we can also learn from. You've all said it in various ways, but that direct language, Robin, you said that, you know, there's times where you have to be ruthless. And I think, especially from maybe a British culture perhaps, but we don't always say exactly what is going to enable each of us and the others to get the job done and to get the best out. Casper, you're smiling. What would you add to that?
I think you're very correct in the British culture of not saying what you think. I think there's a lot of politeness. And to be honest, from my experience, to be honest, like, rip the bandage off. If it hurts, it hurts. But I'd much rather have a coach or a teammate tell me their honest opinion than skirt around the issue. There's nothing worse than being, you know, and being stringed along. You know, I've had coaches before where I haven't played or whatever, and, you know, they keep saying the same, oh, no, sorry, you're doing well, blah, blah. Tell me what I'm not doing well then. Like, yeah. Tell me exactly what you need from me, and I will, that, then at least I have something to work with. Then I can go and work harder, or I can work on that individual specific thing. But just be honest. I think, yeah, I think skirting around the issue and the subject, that's weak leadership. That's just you're just scared of the truth. And I think at the end of the day, players appreciate the truth. And if I'm not good enough, then I'm not good enough in your opinion. And but at least that gives me something to work with.
Yeah, Danny, how have you seen it in the England setup or at Quinn's, where this direct language serves the individual but serves the collective goal?
Yeah, I think firstly you have to be willing to receive negative feedback or constructive criticism, however you want to call it. I fully agree with Casper and Robin that all you want as a player is honesty. You want tangible things that you could go and work on if you're not getting picked. I've been in a very similar boat to Casper before. I mean, I've been dropped more times than anything from the England squad. And some of the excuses I've had before have been interesting. So, but all you want as a player is you want to know, well, why? You know, what do you need to see for me to get back in the team? And sometimes the fact of the matter is it's one person's opinion. And if one person decides that he likes this other person a little bit more than you, then it's going to be really hard for you to get in or get back in until they get fired, Abby. So I'm still hoping that's going to happen at England, but no, I think that boat fortunately sailed. So, but all you want as a player is you want honesty, you want things that you can go out and work on, and you want it to be fair, but you've got to be willing to firstly take that feedback on board, accept it, and then go on and work on it.
Robin, did you always have this natural ability to be so direct and straight up with your language, or was it something that you've had to learn?
No, I've always been pretty direct. I mean, I think when I was playing, I was pretty much to myself in the sense that I would observe a lot, I would learn a lot, because as I said earlier in the conversation, we didn't really have too many coaches around those days. You'd actually learn from talking to somebody else who's senior, who's done well. So, you know, you try and respect what someone else has done. You look at opposition, and if you have an opportunity to go and talk to them, you find out what made them tick or what made them do well, what was their preparation like. And for me, it's all about preparing well. I mean, if you're able to prepare well, you'll trust yourself. And as the guy said earlier, I mean, you have to be honest as a coach. You know, you have to tell people point blank, look, this is the way it is. And if you're not honest with yourself, I don't think you can move forward, to be honest. You're fooling yourself. And similarly with coaching, because as I said in the first part of this conversation, to me, the biggest thing when I coach is about gaining the trust of a player, right? Because we don't really meet the same people all the time. I deal with different teams, different people, different characters, different personalities, different organizations. And it's important to be honest about what you want to do. And if you have an honest game plan and you know this is how it's going to pan out, this is what you want it to pan out like, you have to work towards that. So I think players appreciate that, really appreciate that. I mean, I was someone who, I mean, I wouldn't go into it, but I was told when I was playing, right, I remember when I came back into the side, I don't want to quote or call the name of the player, the coach at that time. That will be my last game. And I didn't appreciate that. At that time, because I just got back into the side. But actually, it sort of triggered something in me, and I think that game, it literally transformed my cricket from being at one level to a level where my confidence level never actually fell after that. And I actually indirectly thanked the guy for it, without realizing, you know, from a player's perspective, that even though he said it, and It was said in a way where it was not really directed at me, but it was directed as other individuals, because he could not actually speak about it. But we became the scapegoat for the conversation. And it really helped me going forward. And I always remember that as something that it really actually you know, sort of backed me up to actually taking my cricket to a really different level after that.
It's so interesting because I always thought, like, you learn from success, and you do, but all of you have spoken about those, what could have been pain moments that have sparked something quite extraordinary as a result. And as we close today's session, come back to you, Casper. And actually, similar to Danny, you've both been stalwarts of a side. What would you say, and I know that Leicester's also having a tough run of things at the moment, but what would you say is the hallmark of Leicester City that, like Danny, you've kept being this long-standing servant of a club that represents something really quite incredible?
Well, Daniel's talked about things being written on our walls. I mean, the phrase "foxes never quit." That's written on our walls everywhere. Like you don't quit. Times are tough, but we've had great times as well. So, yeah, tough times don't last. Tough people do. So, at the end of the day, if you are trusting the process and you are buying into the process, and every single day you can leave the training ground, looking yourself in the mirror and say, I've done everything I can today, then at some point it will turn. But it's inevitable I've been here 11 years that, you know, that you will go through periods. I can probably only think of three periods, this being one of them, in 11 years where things haven't really gone well. But we are working as hard as ever, and it will turn at some point. You know, history tells you that, and I think the only way to get out of difficult spots like that is to work your way out of it.
Yeah. So as we get sort of the concluding thoughts from you all, Casper, what would you sort of summarise, if there's anything that Robin and Danny have shared as well, that go, right, this is what epitomises greatness, and this is perhaps the one or two things that I can offer the viewers of this episode today?
I think what epitomises greatness is longevity, being able to sustain a level for so long, you know, being in a club for 11 years, Danny's been 16 years, you know, being able to play and maintain that hunger and that desire. And at the end of the day, it comes back to what we talked about before, love doing it. If you love doing it, you know, then you're going to keep doing it. You wouldn't be able to play in this game for so long and have the careers that we've had if you didn't love doing what you were doing, because it's just too challenging, it's too tough, and you would end up skipping steps and you'd end up, you know, quitting in the end. So for me, I've always said getting to where I wanted to get to was the easy bit. Staying there, maintaining it, and keep progressing, keeping that hunger, that's the real difficult bit. Because, yeah, you learn from failures, and because the failures, they teach you a lot about yourselves. But for me, probably even more, the successes teach you even more, because once you've reached the summit, once you've reached your goal, how do you reset? You have to reset and go again. For me, winning trophies, winning things, that ignited the passion even more, because that feeling now is bigger than ever. And getting to my age, you realize that you know, the time does start running out. I still feel I've got long, long left, but the feeling of wanting to win has never been bigger than it is now, because I know what it is to win. And when you have tried those experiences, you just want more. And that's not always a common trait, because sometimes people reach their potential, they reach the top and they enjoy the view. You can't do that if you want to have longevity. So for me, greatness is doing things for a long period of time.
Brilliant. Danny, what would you add?
Yeah, I agree with everything Casper says. I was very lucky to I won the league with Harlequins when I was 24, so long time ago, 11 years ago. And we were probably a similar, we thought, oh, this is amazing. And it was the best moment of my life, doing it with my best mates. But then you kind of, it's not arrogance, but you go, oh, well, we could do that again. But I think the difference between being a champion and staying a champion is huge. And we're finding that this year, because you suddenly become, the narrative changes. You become the hunted, and we're the hunted this year. Everybody wants to beat us. I'm sure the year after Castro won, everybody wants to beat Leicester. The same with Robin. After you win an IPL, everybody wants to beat you, because if they beat you, well, they're pretty good, because they've beaten the champions. So the tag changes. You have to work with that. You have to work on that mindset. You're now being chased. You're not the chaser anymore. And for us, we're probably struggling with that a little bit this year, if I'm honest. But it's something that then you go, well, how do we get out of this? How do we get a win? And for me, it's sticking to what you believe, sticking to your identity. And the one thing you have to be is you have to be honest. You have to work incredibly hard. You have to stick to what you're doing, and you have to enjoy it. And that's the kind of values that we have. And I hope that this weekend we can get a win that will just ignite us again. Because the back end of the season last year, we were out of it, completely out of it. And then we snuck our way in. And then for me, had the greatest moment of my rugby life was lifting that trophy at Twickenham, with my family there, I didn't have kids then, but I had kids. I had kids on the pitch this time, lifting a trophy with my best mates. I want that feeling again. So I think it's contagious. You want it more and more. It's like an addiction. You want to win. I want to lift a trophy, and I want to see my best mates having the time of our lives for 3 or 4 days, which we did. I want to do that again. So that's my motivation.
Great stuff. And Robin, then the concluding thoughts from you.
Well, I think the guys summed it up really well. I think Danny actually took a lot of words out of my mouth there. But, you know, at the end of the day, with Mumbai Indians, I've been with them now for more than 12 years. And we've literally set the tone of the way IPL should be played or T20 cricket. It's probably one of the best franchise teams in the world at this point in time. And I remember when I joined in 2010, the owner said, we need to be the next Manchester United of cricket going forward in 20 years' time. And I think we've achieved a huge, huge amount of that going forward. And we want to turn that up a notch a little bit. So as Danny was saying, it's nice to be chased, but we don't want to be catched or caught anywhere along the way. So we keep rebuilding, and there is no end to success, as one would say. You have to continue to improve, and we take that forward. And I really think that we need to thank the management, the MI management, because they have achieved so much personally, and they treat it like anybody else. You know, they have the same passion going forward to help the franchise reach greater heights. And I look forward to doing that.
Guys, thank you so much. We hope you've enjoyed hearing what greatness means to our special guests and to Casper and to Robin and Tani. It was brilliant hearing your lived experience. Trying to think what I will take away. I kind of want to watch this again and get my mantras of which I get the practices on. But I think something around preparation, honesty, and then having the flair and the fun to execute what you love doing is what has stayed with me. I hope that you have enjoyed us. And DHL, thank you for having us and making this possible. Danny and Casper, go out in the rain and get hurt. Continually seeking that greatness. Thank you, everyone, and see you next time.
Yes, thank you, guys.
Take care.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.